Hey guys, thanks for listening. I think we're up to episode 5 now. I was on a little hiatus, so I got back. I was on a little Florida trip and was over to Indianapolis Supercross and had to fly down to Florida for the Daytona Supercross and hung out with the family for a few days. So I haven't been around much. I haven't, you know, talked to anybody or anything. So we gave David a ring and see if he'd come in, sit down, and talk with Wayne and I. Wayne's been out. He's had stuff going on. He's been sick. So we really had no clue what's been going on. I've been kind of off the media grid too. So he filled us in what's kind of the latest, greatest, what's happening around the shop and everything. So we just kind of sit down and catch up with everything. And I talk a little bit about the Florida trip and some different things. And actually, it was a pretty good podcast. A little short, but you know, hey, it is what it is, and we gave you guys, I think, a pretty good solid hour. So sit back, relax, and enjoy.
Are we recording?
Yes, we are.
Yeah, we're back.
Yeah.
Back in the set. Oh, never mind. I won't sing because I'm terrible. So what's up, guys?
Not
nothing. Wayne, how about you? Anything exciting?
No, other than this weather stuff.
Oh, I know. Man, it feels like forever since we were sitting in the studio. I've been busy. I've been down in Florida. Me and you went over to Indianapolis. And so we're trying to get our ducks in a row.
So, yeah, tell the listeners, what did you do in Florida
then? Well, we'll start off with I took Wayne, let's see, a couple weekends ago. I took him to his first ever Supercross race over in Indianapolis.
That was a blast.
Something, you know, I've been doing for almost 20 years. So I gave him the grand tour. We took him down. He got to walk around the track and meet some riders. And if nobody's ever seen it, Supercross, you know, or watched it on TV, it really is phenomenal. I mean, to watch these guys and what they can do and, you know, what do you think, Wayne? This is kind of, I just kind of got you into it somehow, and you just started watching it. But now that you were there firsthand, what did you think?
Man, you just get a full realization of how far these guys are jumping, how fast they're going, and how rough that track was. Man, that track, you can't see it on the TV. Yeah. Man, that thing is tore up.
It doesn't know justice, does it? Till you get down and walk the track and see how big the jumps are and how peak they are and how fast these guys go. And so, well, we won't dwindle on that too much. But anyway, and then
Wait, how did you get him to walk on the track?
I have a lot of connections with the AMA, and we just went and got him some passes.
AMA as in?
American Motorcycle Association.
Yeah, not the
not the American Medical Association or whatever.
Modeling.
Oh, yeah, that one too. No, this is American Motorcycle Association. And anyway, we took him there and we got him some kind of all-access passes, and we walked all around, you know, took him, did the whole big tour, you know, around. He got to go deep in the depths of the stadium and walk around. And
So why were you there then?
Well, I was just there because Wayne said he started watching it on TV, and he goes, man, I really, really would like to go see one of these in person. I said, you sure you really want to go? He said, oh, man. I go, let me make a phone call. So made a phone call, and then we drove over, you know, had a couple of real nice hotels and, you know, spent the whole weekend. And
all right. Tell David why you can make a couple phone calls.
Well, I was an AMA official for almost 20 years. And then here in probably the last 5 or 6, I was kind of not in charge, but I kind of helped run the show and run the floor for the racing.
The plot thickens.
Yes.
So, oh, really? So you're one of the guys that actually makes it work?
Yeah, one of the many guys. I mean, there's many guys that help out, but I'm kind of one guy.
Wow.
I can't even remember my title because I kind of retired the last couple years. I haven't really done too many. And but anyway, they gave me a call here a couple weeks ago, and they said, hey, would you like to go to Florida? We really need you and need some help for the Daytona Supercross. And they caught me at the right time. You know, the weather's been so crappy, had a bad day at work, and I said, yeah, I'll be there. So last weekend, I Took about 5 days off. My family lives in Florida, so flew down there and hung out at Daytona and worked the race and enjoyed the weather while I was down there.
Nice. I did.
Actually did a little bit of flying while I was down there, a little bit of teaching. I'll get into that here in a little bit. But, yeah, so I just got back, when was it? Monday night, which I didn't think I was going to make it back. I got to the airport, and they go, oh, your flight's 3 hours late. And I go, oh, you got to be kidding. Last flight into Akron. I thought for sure they'd cancel it, and I'd be stuck there. But luckily it was their overnighter that had to be here in the morning. So if it was 10 hours late, they probably would have ran it.
Oh, wow.
So I got home about 12:30 in the morning Monday night, and then had to go to work Tuesday in the lovely weather that we had. So.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, great weekend. Oh, man, the weather was nice. And so I've been gone. I've been out of the loop for a while. I haven't seen anybody, talked to you guys. So what's going on? What's new?
Oh, so many things. We're coming up on the 400th episode of Flight Test.
Wow, I can't believe that. That's crazy.
It is kind of crazy. It gets out of hand pretty quickly.
Wow.
So we're doing a special episode where we're actually blowing up some airplanes size-wise, not explosion-wise.
And I may have seen those in there, and I was shocked to see how big they are.
Yeah, they're pretty awesome. Nick Frederick, Nick Nachos, he made a special decal set for my plane. It looks absolutely fantastic.
Oh, awesome. Maybe I'll tweet a little tiny speck of a photo or something, a little tease later on.
Yeah. Otherwise, we got some blackout quad and hex, and it's these tiny little carbon fiber hexes and quads that are swinging 5-inch props and they're running 2,300 kV motors, and they're just tiny and they still lift the GoPro. It's insane. And they're so fast.
No kidding.
Yeah, they're awesome. So we all built one each of us, and we've been flying them like crazy.
No kidding.
Yeah, they're awesome.
Wow. What kind of flight time can you get out of those?
Like 8 minutes. Okay. If you run the Hex runs a 3S3300.
No kidding.
But yeah, it's the size of it is like, I don't know. It's like it's... How big would you say that is? It's like...
They're probably maybe 8 to 10 inches, maybe. Is that, somewhere around in there.
Yeah, I would say 10 inches.
Yeah.
In total size.
Yeah. What was funny about them, though, you look at them, and you kind of said it earlier, it's like they're so little and there's so much stuff packed in them. It looks like just this flying pile, kind of.
Yeah.
There's no, like, arms sticking out. It's just a pile of everything on, and they're... They're loud and nasty sounding, and they sound like they're going to kill somebody.
Yeah, they sound so angry, but they're awesome to fly. It's so much fun.
And we had, let's see, I popped in here today, was getting ready for the podcast, and I mean, my phone says we had gusts of like 30, 35 miles an hour, and you guys were out flying around with those.
Yeah, they're so fast that they actually cut the wind pretty good, so we were out just having a blast with them. It was really irresponsible, though, but it was fun.
Oh, look, they flew really good, though.
Well, considering the size, I'm just amazed.
Right.
I don't know how it works.
So you guys just testing them, review them, or what's going
on? Yeah, we're shooting an episode on Monday.
Oh, nice.
About them, so hopefully we can do some high-speed racing through some woods or something.
Ooh.
That would be nice.
Nice. That's awesome.
Yeah.
What else going on? Anything else?
Good question. No, been mostly working on the big plane.
Mm-hmm.
And the tricopter's up and going again. Let's see. No, that's mostly it.
All right, good. Well, we'll move on from there then. Let's see. I got a few things to talk about. I've still been getting a lot of emails and Twitter questions, and I try to answer everybody, you know, at least give them a shout out or something. But every now and then I get these ones that I have no idea. Maybe you can answer a couple of these, David. One of them I had no clue. One guy asked me roughly how many speed build kits do you guys produce a month? Any idea, roughly?
Let's see, a month, that would be maybe 500, to 800 maybe or 1,000 tops.
Wow, that's more than I thought. And he wanted to know, like, how fast does a laser cutter cut them out?
I don't know the speed in inches, but it's really fast.
Pretty quick, huh? What about time-wise? Like,
time-wise for, like, the vegan takes roughly 15 minutes to cut,
wow,
all in all, because mm-hmm, we cut multiple different sheets of foam and then the poster board. So it's equals out to roughly 15 minutes.
Right.
Time.
Huh, that's interesting. I didn't know that. Another one, probably this is for you. I got another Twitter question is, somebody wants to know if it's even possible to make an EDF multi-copter.
It is possible, but it's the reason why it's not a good idea is, first of all, EDFs are not particularly efficient at producing static thrust. And also, what I mean by that is they need a lot of RPM to actually produce what the lifting power.
Mm-hmm.
They're made for going really fast,
right,
which means they have a high pitch, which means they don't grab the air efficiently at low
speeds. I see what you're saying.
So that's one of the reasons. The other reason is since they're so small, you have to the RPM change between just increasing the thrust is so many RPMs that it takes so much time for the thrust to change.
Oh, I know exactly. Just like flying between a prop plane and an EDF, like it has that split second when you fire while it...
And it doesn't do
yes,
anything.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, so it has to rev up, and that's
right,
really bad in when you use it for control.
Right.
It works,
uh-huh,
but it's not as good as a normal
right,
prop.
But it is possible.
Yes, it is possible.
So you would need, like, say on your tricopter, you would probably have to have, like, 3 70-millimeter fans on a big 5-cell or something probably, huh?
Yep, that would be – it would work on 3, yes.
Oh, probably. Would it?
Yeah, probably. It wouldn't be particularly efficient. You would get maybe 4 or 5 minutes flight time.
Uh-huh.
But it would work.
I'd like to see that. I mean, do you imagine and the sound that, you know, that EDF?
Yeah, it would make such a bad noise.
I think that would be pretty cool.
I don't know the fascination with it. I'd rather have something efficient and fast.
Mm-hmm. True. But it'd just be interesting because I've never really seen one. So
yeah,
I think
true,
it'd be interesting. Another email I had from Bernie Smith. Hey, I appreciate the question, but he wanted to know about more about the Orange RX flight stabilizers. And it just happens to be that Wayne and I have quite a few of these, and this last fall we did quite a bit of testing with them, right?
Right.
And I got mixed feelings with them. You got yours on your Beaver. I mounted one on a T28, and we went out and spent all day just kind of tweaking and tuning and testing and... And, you know, have you tried any of those, David?
I've tried others, but not the orange.
Not
one.
The orange.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, like what other ones?
The Guardian Stabilizer.
Oh, now I heard that was good.
It is.
Really good. Yeah,
yeah.
But you're going to pay for that. It's like
mm-hmm,
$70, right?
Yep. So it hurts.
Now, the thing I found out with the Orange RX, like say probably with the Guardian or say like with the AS3X, if the plane was trying to bank into the wind, the ailerons would correct it, and they would kind of hold that there as the airplane was going back to a neutral position.
Yeah.
Now, what we found with the Orange RX is, like, it would correct it, and then it would go back to neutral.
Yes, because the Orange RX is only gyro-controlled,
mm-hmm,
and it only uses a P algorithm, which
mm-hmm,
means that it only senses and corrects for current movement.
Right.
As soon as that movement stops, it will go back to center. So it would only, it's only going to take out gusts. It's not going to mm-hmm, take out constant wind.
Right, right. So I found, I mean, it did seem to help a little bit, but compared to like the AS3X, I didn't think it did that well.
No, because you can't compare the
right,
two because they're totally different.
Right. The other problem we had was, and now again, we didn't have these on any high dollar really digital servos, but when we did turn the gains up, high enough to where, you know, we thought we were getting correct movement, the servos went nuts. They were just jittering and jittering. And, like, I tried to do a roll one time, and the servos just went. And, I mean, the airplane was all over. But you can switch it on and off from the radio. So
okay,
I'd turn it off, and then I'd turn it back on, try a different. So we had a lot of problem with that, too.
Uh-huh.
But we didn't try it with any high-grade digital servos. They were, you know.
Yeah, it sounded like. So would it wig out and continue to wig out?
Yeah, like the more, like if you try to do an aileron roll real quick and you slam the stick left or right, it would instantly, the servos would just go crazy and the plane wouldn't do anything. Now, as soon as we turned the gains back down, you know, to where you had less throw, then it was okay. But then it got to the point where if it was really gusty, it wasn't hardly doing anything.
Ah, okay.
So in... Now, Wayne, you didn't have the servo problem, but we didn't really turn your gains up. No. But that was the problem I found with the Orange RX.
What was your expectations before setting out then?
I thought I didn't expect it to be as good as like the Guardian or the AS3X, but I expected, you know, if we had some decent wind, that it was just going to help keep the plane more stable and neutral.
Okay.
But it didn't really, I mean, it did, but not real well. Now, these weren't real big. Like I said, it was on a T28, and it was pretty windy that day. And what do you think? I mean, you had it on your Beaver.
Yeah, I guess I'm probably not the best person to ask because I couldn't really tell that big a difference with it between it being on or off when I was coming in for landings and stuff.
Right, and see, that's my point. You know, when it was as windy as it was and we're doing takeoff and landings like that and you couldn't tell the difference whether it was on or off, it wasn't really working that well.
To be fair, the Beaver is pretty darn stable.
It is.
Right. Stable. But... Again, though, when it's gusty, that Beaver will really move around in the wind just because of the high wing and everything.
Yeah, but also it's a small plane. I don't know what. Yeah, the only thing I can think that the Orange stabilizer would do is take away wing rock, for instance.
Right.
But it didn't make it feel like a bigger plane to you? Like,
I didn't think so at all.
I didn't notice it.
Then it's a failure.
Because
that's really what the good things makes it feel like a much larger plane.
Right. But I'm not done. I'd like to try it in a couple more planes just to see, you know, to compare it. But I got a lot of time on that T28 and I fly it in a lot of wind and I just really thought it would really kind of calm it down. You know, because that thing you get above 10, 12 miles an hour, it gets pushed around pretty good.
So can you set the gains from the radio?
No, you have to land and then it's got the little, you know, the gains on the control.
Pods. Yeah. Okay.
Yep. Yep.
Because that's a big problem. I put the open arrow. KK2 flashed open arrow on my my Biggin, and the problem is it has such a wide speed envelope that if I had the gain set for hovering or high alphaing, I couldn't go full throttle. It would just wig out like crazy because the gains were too high.
Right.
But on the other hand, if I set it for the high end, I couldn't feel it at all. So that was a big problem. But on the one cool thing about the open arrow is you can bind it to a remote switch or a remote like trigger on your transmitter, so you can set the gains in flight. So first time I actually had it on the throttle, mixed to the throttle. But when you're high alphing, you're using a lot of throttle just to like punch it, and it would be weird. It was just, it wasn't optimal.
Huh.
The speed envelope was just too big.
Right.
So I can imagine the stabilizer not being as good on airplanes that has a wide envelope, unfortunately. I don't know. I don't know how the AS3X does it, because they're pretty good.
They are really good, especially like on the micro stuff. It is amazing how stable they can keep those little airplanes.
I have a mini Viggin now.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, you didn't see it?
I didn't see that. How did I miss that? Yeah, is it out here?
Yeah, it's
all right,
out
there. See you later. I'm going to go look.
So it's a tiny, it's a 45% version of the Viggin.
Uh-huh.
And I put AS3X board in it.
No.
Yeah. And it flies fantastic.
No way.
I had to extend the control horns on it because it had too much gain.
Yeah.
But it is awesome.
Oh, I can't wait to see that.
You just launch it and it just goes in like, it's awesome.
Oh, how did I miss that one?
All right, guys, we'll be right back.
Yeah. Now, here's a question I was thinking about, but I wasn't sure. Like, you were talking about the Guardian. I was kind of thinking of maybe putting a Guardian in my Mystique. Uh-huh. Now, my question was, is you're up there and you're cruising around and say you're in a circle pattern or you're doing a figure eight or whatever, is that going to take away, like when you get into a thermal, you know, how it might lift the tail up, or you see the wing rock or something. Is that going to take that away from you realizing, you know, that you're in a thermal or catching a thermal or something?
In my opinion, yes, a little bit. You will still see the airplane move, mm-hmm. but it's not as easy to see. And also, a stabilizer will always create drag for you.
Because it's constantly, that makes sense.
So as soon as you hit something, right. it's going to cause that drag and you lose airspeed.
Right.
And on a glider, I wouldn't do a stabilizer on a glider except for if you're not after
performance.
If you're doing a speed machine, right. then yeah, go for it.
Yeah.
But if you're there to milk as much energy of the out of the air as possible, mm-hmm. then it doesn't make much sense to me.
But I guess with the Mystique, it's pretty.
I don't see why you would need it in that.
Now, originally, when I had the Radiant Pro, that thing, right. especially when you got up high, that's the one I was really. I'm going to get rid of that thing anyway. But
good.
That's the one I was really wanting a stabilizer, because that thing had a tendency, if you were up high and it got a gust of wind, wherever that thing went wing-wise, that's where it headed.
Yep.
You know, and it was just, you were almost done. And you're fighting and trying to get it back, and you're losing altitude. And,
yeah.
Oh, it was horrible. You know, where with the regular Raiden, with the polydihedral wings, that thing, you get a gust, and then it levels up, and another, you know, you don't have to worry about that thing.
Yeah, it's awesome. Did you fly the Radiant Pro?
No, I don't think I have.
I tried to get him to fly it, but I don't think he's flown it.
Mm. Yeah, you should try it. So you know what about it.
I mean, you fly the Dynamic S, so yeah. the Radiant Pro would be. I just didn't really find any big benefit to it, you know, for me. My type of flying and around here and the thermaling. Now, I could kind of see if you're in a tight field or if you're out west where you get the booming thermals, you know, something like that, and you can use all the functions. Some guys love that airplane.
Yeah, but I don't know. I wonder if they tried something different. And I mean, I don't want to insult people, but if you haven't flown anything better, of course it's the best.
Right.
But because it just doesn't feel right to me. I've flown quite a few gliders, and
right.
this one is just, it doesn't feel like it should.
Right.
It doesn't fly like a glider
right.
should. It's just weird.
Yeah, it is just weird. Something, I can't pinpoint it,
yeah.
like what it is, but yeah, there's something definitely strange about it.
Just,
and what got me is when we flew together and you were flying your regular Radian, I'd fly the Pro, we'd go up together. Well, guess what? I'm on the ground, Wayne's still, you know, 200 feet in the air,
yeah.
and that's, right then and there, I was like, all right, I'm done with that.
Well, it's like what we touched on before about that, though, is I think it's just a bad name. It should not have been called a Radian. It should have been called something else because when you come in from flying a Radian and then you fly a Radian Pro, you kind of get the your mental set is that, well, it should fly like a Radian but
right.
have a little bit more stuff, and it's not. It is absolutely not even close to being the same plane.
That's very true. I think they, like you say, I think they set up for failure, or like they gave you expectations that they were not going to uphold. So, they called it something else. Yeah. No, I still think it's a pretty bad plane. That's just me. Sorry for Radian bashing.
But the Radian's great, so.
Yeah, the original Radian's fantastic.
Can't wait for the little one, the little UMX one.
Oh,
that's going to make me crazy.
April, right? Yeah.
Yes. Matter of fact, I got to pre-order that thing. I keep forgetting. Every week, I got to pre-order. And then I keep forgetting. But I'm going to pre-order it.
Yeah.
So, all right. I'm going to change gears here a little bit, talk a little bit just briefly about my Florida trip and everything, besides the motorcycle racing and everything. But one place, if you guys are ever in Florida, especially Central Florida, if you guys ever get a chance to go to Graves Hobby down in Orlando, have you been there?
I've ordered from them.
That place is unbelievable. Like, you walk in there, and it's – I have some pictures of it. I should probably maybe put them in the show notes or whatever. It has – first of all, when you walk in – the whole ceiling is completely full of planes, and they're all for sale, like used planes, you know, people have brought in or they've bought or whatever, but the whole ceiling is just completely covered.
Nice.
And like anything and everything is in there. Like, they have a whole wall of nothing but just, say, props. Like, you could go in there and you're just like, oh, you know, because it's overwhelming, and just shelf after shelf after shelf. Now, couple years ago when I went there the first time, they actually gave me a grand tour. So not only when you go in there and look around and they have everything and everything, the guy says, well, come back here. And he took me back to the warehouse. And it was just, I don't know, like three floors. It was just huge. So that place is really awesome, and the people are fantastic, and if you ever get a chance, it's just unreal down there.
Can I suggest something?
Yeah.
That we switch the mics.
Which mic?
You switch mic.
Okay, I can do that. This one's bad?
Yeah, you're popping your piece.
Oh, all right.
So, okay. Sorry about that, listeners. We're switching mics.
Hello. How's this? Is this better?
Yes, thank you.
All right. You know, I had trouble with that mic last time, too.
Yeah, you're sitting closer than we are. So you're popping your piece. So now you have a pop
Hello.
Filter.
Oh, all right. So after the race and stuff, my stepdad, I bought him a champ, or I shouldn't say I bought him. I talked him into buying a champ about a year ago. And last time I was down there, I was giving him some flight lessons and everything. And he did pretty good, and it was windy and everything. So this year, I've been talking to him. Well, the poor guy hasn't been out since last time. I was down there. So I took him out, and we went into the backyard and gave him some, some flight lessons. And finally, after, a couple – well, first we got stuck in a tree. So then we had the string and the nuts and the bolts, and we're flying, trying to get the thing out. So we finally got it out of the tree and gave him some flight lessons. And after a couple hours, he was doing pretty good. And it was so nice. Like, Wayne, we've taught numerous people how to fly, but it's such a good feeling to see the smile on his face. You could tell he was having fun. He was – pretty comfortable, and you can't really hurt that plane. I think his big thing was he was definitely afraid of just crashing it. So, I would fly and I go, look, if you're in trouble, just cut the throttle. The thing self-rights up because of, the dehedral in the wings. I said, the thing will just land, and we were in grass, so the thing just goes right in, no problem. Mm-hmm. So after a couple hours, he was fine. He was cranking around. He had a big smile on his face, and hopefully now, with me not being there. But he's coming up in May, so I told him, when you get here in May, come down here. We'll buy some swappables. I'll show you how to build them, and then you can take them back, and you can just have fun. So I got another guy hopefully into the hobby. And then, I couldn't believe this. My brother, who's about 5 years younger than me,
Wait, you have a brother?
Yes, I have a younger brother.
How did you know that?
Yes.
Wow.
I got a younger brother.
Really?
Yes. Huh. It lives in Florida. Actually, my whole family lives in Florida. They all migrated down there, and I'm the only idiot left up here. So I know he has a little interest in flying, but he's never picked up a controller. He's never touched the sticks. And I go, you want to try it? And he's like, I don't know. I said, Dad, just take it and fly it. Just try it. And he's like, okay. So I handed him, gave him just a few little tips on what to do, kind of do the circle pattern and whatever. That guy grabbed that thing and instantly, just like it was nothing, he never crashed. He never hit a tree. And he flew a whole battery. Just like it was nothing.
Really?
Yes.
Nice. Does he play a lot of video games?
No. He is not a video
what?
No.
Really?
No. No. I couldn't believe it.
There goes my theory.
Yeah. So that brings me up to something that I don't know if I've ever asked you guys. And my wife tells me this all the time, but I would never do it. Would people pay for flight lessons, do you think?
Yes.
You think they would?
Some people would, yeah.
No
problem.
No problem?
Yeah, I have people that wanted to fly me to different countries
really?
To give them flight lessons.
Because my wife, every time I come home, I met this guy, and she goes, you need to start charging for flight lessons. You do this way too much. But in my heart, I couldn't do it. I just physically couldn't do it.
Yeah, no, I don't think we should because it's a hobby, but you could.
You really think people would?
Yeah, I think so. If you have some, especially if you build a reputation and all that, I think people would, it's service like anything else.
I don't know.
Yeah, I would have a hard time doing it. I just like helping people out. So,
and I've had people offer me money. They're like, this is just, what do I owe you? Just come back and fly. That's all I want, So, which brings me up to another thing. The champ's great for, small fields or somewhere close. And like my stepdad said, it's nice that he can go in my brother's backyard and just fly around. He doesn't have to kind of pack up, and he doesn't have to drive anywhere. But here was the big problem we ran into was a couple of days, like, you know, midday, we had like 10-mile-an-hour winds. Well, when you're a beginner, even I had a little trouble, you know, keeping it going.
Yeah.
So I really think that they need to make something champ size or in a trainer that has the AS3X. Why haven't they done that yet?
The Duet is pretty good for that. I don't know how it would do in wind, though, but it is pretty awesome.
Yeah, and that has the AS3X?
AS3X differential thrust, and it has differential thrust and an elevator, and that's it.
Ah.
It flies fantastic.
Really?
Really home run on that.
Huh.
I've only flown it inside, though, so I have no idea, but I mean, it's great because
right.
you always have rudder authority.
Uh-huh.
You always have, it's a big elevator, so you're great. And you can't destroy the props on it because it's dual props and they're tiny and the nose protrudes further and they're far in than on the wing, so you can never hit them more or less.
You think it would do okay in the wind, though. That's the problem.
10 miles an hour is a lot.
Yeah.
I think I have no idea how it would do. I've never tried it. But on the other hand, I wouldn't do the champ in 10 miles.
No, it was tough. But if you got something maybe kind of that size, though, because the Ultramicro Warbirds with the AS3X, 10-mile-an-hour wind, no problem.
Yeah.
Or even like the Ultramicro Carbon Cub, you know, that's no problem. But problem with that's it's a little bit too, you know, that's more of an intermediate. So even if they had something like the Champ or the Carbon Cub, the Ultramicro Carbon Cub set up for a beginner, maybe a little bit bigger wing, slow it down a little bit and put the AS3X, I think trainer-wise that would be unbelievable.
The problem is that, you need, why they fly good in the wind is because they are
a little faster,
right. Has a little higher wing loading, they cut a little bit better.
That's true.
Trainers usually have an under-cambered airfoil,
that's
therefore
true.
They're more.
Right, that's true. But
yeah.
That's something to think about, though.
Yeah, so anyone out there works at Horizon Hobby or anything, just make one or send us a suggestion.
Yeah, that, you know.
Anyone flown the Duet in wind? Please let us know.
Yeah, I'm curious. I mean, I've seen the videos and I've seen it, you know, fly indoors and everything, but I've never, Horizon Indoor, Josh's kids were flying it down there.
Yeah, like crazy.
And it looked pretty cool. I should have grabbed the transmitter. I didn't try it. Slowly but surely, I've been, in the hobby room, cleaning up a little bit and kind of getting stuff ready. I keep thinking the weather's going to break. But I was looking around. I was going through my airplanes and everything. And I can't believe that I would say 90% of all my stuff I have hopped up one way or another, whether
yes.
bigger motor, ESC, battery, you know what I mean?
Yep.
And I got to looking around at everything I have has been hopped up. And I went through a phase like, and I think stuff nowadays has gotten a little bit better because I went from pulling it out of the box, not even flying it, tearing it apart, putting a motor in it, bigger, you know what I mean?
Being American, yeah.
Is that what it is, being an American? Yeah. You know, okay. I'll take that.
And a lot of it's your personality, so that makes
right.
sense.
But here's the funny thing is I'm kind of resorting back the other way now. Like, I'm taking it for what it is, you know, and flying it, you know, to its potential. Or I'm actually finding that I'm liking it stock, you know, better than and some of my stuff that's hopped up.
Yes, and that's the glider pilot coming out.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, because you're flying the wings instead of flying the prop. And it's more about, feeling the airplane instead of just feeling the power.
Right. And I mean, it got to a point where, okay, we'd go one step up bigger in the motor and we'd fly. Let's go a little bigger. So we put it would just get to the point to where usually the wings would fold up on it or something.
Yeah.
And then we're like, well, okay, that one's done. On to the next one. Bigger motor, you know.
It's funny, a multiplex in the U.S., Mm-hmm. Back in Europe, they sell different flight packages. They sell the normal one and then the super powerful one. And they're like, hardly anyone buys that. And in America, that's the only one they sell.
Really?
Yeah, they don't sell the normal one.
Oh, that is hilarious. I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's kind of funny.
Wow.
Makes sense.
So I guess I'm the only one. You're nobody else is hopping anything up.
Yeah. No, I mean, I've done it, yes. But yeah. There's planes that are made for speed and planes that are not.
Wow.
And I like flying the lift sometimes.
Right. And there's planes that aren't made for that you do it anyway. And then how about the tricopters or the quadcopters? I mean, where does it get to the point where is it a happy medium between flight time and, you know, efficiency and everything? Well, I mean, where do you, because I know when I first met you, you had your one setup and it was just a 3-cell. And then when you come back, you had that hot setup with a 4-cell, which is so much better.
Yes. And yeah, it's better for certain things. The 3S setup was, to start out, the less power your multirotor has, the mm-hmm. more control you have over it, the more each step in the resolution, because you're going to have, you have a finite amount of resolution, let's say 10, 24 steps on the throttle, mm-hmm. just in general. You have 1,024 steps. And if that's between accelerating 5 meters a second or 1 meter a second, mm-hmm. those 1,024 steps is going to give you more resolution in that spectrum of flying very calm and very precision-wise. But if you go crazy and you have a really powerful setup, you have more speed but less resolution. It's harder for you to get smoother shots.
Right. Okay, that makes sense.
So there is a happy medium. So the reason why I went to a 4-cell is efficiency, getting longer flight times, also having the more voltage you have, the less current you run. Therefore, it's more efficient because I squared times R equals the power loss. So running less current makes more sense. Also, high voltage means more torque. So in the motors, so the RPMs change faster. Therefore, you have more control. You get more precision when it's changing RPMs. And I chase a lot of planes with this setup, which I didn't do back in Sweden.
Uh-huh.
So now I needed a setup that I could keep up with planes and be very fast. So the medium for me is 900 kV motors running 9-inch props and the 4S setup, 4S 3000, which gives me between 10 and 15 minutes flight time and cuts the air really nice. And it's the bigger battery makes it heavier, therefore it travels faster. So that's why I go with that. So even if you go crazy big props and motors, you're going to lose the resolution. And that's the problem.
Ah, gotcha.
That makes sense.
So there's a happy medium. There's a point where you can go, wow, do you hear that wind?
Yeah, that's crazy.
That wind is shaking the windows in here. Man.
So I guess it depends if you're going to just go out and do some sport flying and just buzzing around, or if you're going to slap a camera on there and actually.
Yes, exactly. So, if you're going to do camera stuff, you don't want a copter that's too overpowered. Mm-hmm. But if you're going to go out, fly line of sight, do flips or rolls, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah. So what's the hottest setup you've ever done? I mean, if you just put a hot setup on there just to see, like, maybe structural-wise what it would do or anything?
On the tricopter?
Yeah.
I have gone pretty bad.
Yeah?
Where it was on wooden booms, 10-millimeter wooden booms, uh-huh. and it would fold up so it looked like a bowl.
Oh, you gotta be kidding.
Then when you went full throttle, and it would just wig out because the motors were actually pointing more inwards. So it was like, and it was just, it was not good.
Not good, huh?
Yeah, so now I run carbon fiber.
So
you have the precision of, it never flexes, and the torsion strength is better as well.
Right.
So it's fun to experiment, yeah.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. All right, here, I got another question for you guys, and I'll let you think about it for a minute, but I'll go first. And I was thinking about this the other day, but has there ever been a plane where either you've seen it or it's new and you thought, I don't want nothing to do with that, or even maybe flown it the first time and then you're like, oh, this is no good, And then maybe a week later, 2 weeks later, whatever, it's starting to become one of your favorite airplanes. Has that ever happened? Can you think of something? Mm-hmm. I'll tell you what. You guys think a little bit, and I'm going to go through a little bit of my list while you're thinking about it.
Go.
The first one I thought I absolutely would not like, and even to this day it's one of the best flying planes, is do you remember the Rare Bear?
Mm-hmm.
Chad gave me that one, and we had two planes. One of them was a stock setup, and Chad told me to take the other Rare Bear, soup it up, you know, naturally.
Okay, to the before we get too far in, what's the Rare Bear? Just explain the
Rare Bear is an EPP kind of trainer type airplane, low wing. Man, I'm trying to remember. We'll have to put the link the episode in the show notes.
What size is it?
I think it's around 40 inches or okay. So. Wingspan, all EPP. It's kind of like a profile plane.
But it's a thicker profile.
Thicker profile, yes. Very docile. Trying to think what else. I'm trying to remember who makes that. It was...
A Roland someone?
Yeah.
Can't remember the
Something
company.
Of time or... can't remember.
Yeah, I can't remember the name.
Right, but we'll link it up.
Yeah, so... Yeah, sorry. Go ahead.
So anyway, that was one that I really didn't think I would like. But after I got it all together and got to fly, that thing is beautiful. It's so easy to fly, and you know, I had a hot motor on it naturally. Unlimited vertical, but like it flies inverted, hands off. It does everything very well for just an EPP foam airplane. So that's one. Anybody else? I got many, but
yeah, I got many
okay,
too.
Go ahead. Shoot one.
First time I saw the Multiplex Easy Star, I thought I would, yeah, that's so incredibly ugly. And I thought I'm not ever going to fly that. And then I ended up buying one because everyone kept on suggesting it, and it's such a good flyer. It was fantastic, and that's actually how I learned to fly properly.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So that's one. So all right. Next, go ahead.
How about you, Wayne? Oh, come on. There's got to be one out there.
I'm still working on that.
Still working on that?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
You sure?
Okay.
All right.
Yep.
Well, that reminds me, since you said the Easy Star, a while back when the Bixler 2s come out,
yeah.
And we were doing a review here for flight test, after we were all done with the shoot and everything, we were out cranking around, Bix was like, you want to fly? And I was like, okay. And I was really impressed with the Bixler 2. Again, it was very easy to fly. I had the flaps. It was just, you know, very relaxing and very fun.
Yeah.
And it just cruised around. And for the money, you really can't beat that airplane. It's kind of like the Easy Star. It's just...
It is actually a copy
right.
of the Easy Star to start with, but they made changes to it.
Yeah. So that was another one that awesome airplane. I just didn't think it would interest me.
Yeah.
You know, but for a lazy weekend, you just want to go out and tool around or keep in the trunk of your car or something. Like, you could fly that thing almost anywhere.
The EPP FPV. It's one of my favorite airplanes to this day.
Oh,
blue one.
Yeah.
It's super ugly. It's like it's such an ugly airplane. But I fell in love with it the first time I flew it. Josh was flying, and he's like, here, fly it. I'm like, okay. So it is the best rudder trainer of all time because you have to fly the rudder.
Right.
Otherwise, it doesn't fly at all.
Yeah.
And it forces you to just jam those sticks everywhere, and it flies it's so fun. But it needs a landing gear on the bottom.
Yep.
Create that drag on the bottom, and you can land and take it off.
Right.
Oh, it's such a good airplane. I have to order a couple before they go out of
about
production.
That. Yeah. We used to have...
That's Alex.
Oh, Alex. I was like, what is firing up now? Holy cow. He must have got it running then. Yeah. Everything's working good. We used to have like three or four of those at one time.
Yeah,
right?
They keep on dying.
They keep dying?
Yeah. Josh still has one. And every time we go out and just fly for fun, we end up doing combat for some reason.
Oh, geez. We shot a lot of episodes with a couple of those. I mean, different things.
Yeah, the package exchange.
Oh, that was... I never forget that day. That was so much fun that day.
It was awesome. It never turned into an episode.
I know.
It was so much fun.
Right. And we did bomb drops and all kinds of stuff with that thing. I completely forgot about that.
It's just a workhorse.
Yeah.
It is... Yeah, I like it a lot. I recommend it.
Yeah. And you can stick like a 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 milliamp battery in there and fly for an hour.
Yeah. Actually, keep it light. It's so fluid. floaty and so nice.
Yeah.
Then you can load it down.
Yeah.
But it's like flying a sponge.
Yeah, you're right. It is. It is flat. Yeah, it just doesn't really do anything too great. It just floats around up there.
Yeah.
We ought to try, maybe even, you know what? That'd be interesting, is cut the weight down on that thing as light as possible and see if we can get it to thermal. Think it's possible?
Yeah, I think so.
All right. We'll have to try that.
It's so draggy, though.
Here's another one of mine. Again, this is probably one of the favorite airplanes of mine, was the Radian. Now, before I even got into sailplanes or anything, I was hardcore warbirds. I mean, Supamop, Hot Rod, you know, that's all I wanted to fly is, you know, fast stuff. And the Radian come out, I thought, oh, who would ever want that thing? But I kept following the forums on there, and person after person after person after person kept raving about this Radian. I'm like, man, how can you know? And people that had no experience, never even flown one before, they're like, this thing is unbelievable. So I thought, okay, for $150, if I don't like it, I'll sell it. There's many people out there that like this thing. My first flight, I just tossed it in the air. And, you know, again, I was all new to this, so I had no idea really what I was doing. So I was checking the balance, you know, and I read online, you know, you chuck it, you know, get the glide slope and everything. And I threw that thing, and it must have went 100 yards. I was like, how is that even possible? Yeah. That thing can't do that. And after the first day, I just fell in love with that airplane.
Same here. I thought it was one of the ugliest airplanes I've ever seen.
Yeah.
But then you fly it, and it's so gorgeous.
Yeah.
Wow. It's funny how you fall in love with the characteristics of an airplane.
Yes. Right.
When you fly it instead of just the looks.
Right.
You know what I did think of?
I knew there had to be one in there somewhere.
It was the one that you kept talking up, and I kept thinking, I'm not so sure. And it was a Night Vapor. I didn't think I would really care for that one.
Uh-huh.
But, dude, when the wind is calm, and, like, if I go out and I chase my grandson around the front yard for, at least an hour, it's like, put in another battery. Let's go.
Yeah.
And you could just chase him and just float it around and just – it was so awesome that it's just fun to fly, and
especially
like when the weather stinks.
Yeah.
I can go out on the back deck and fly that thing around, or fly it around in my dining room.
Yeah.
You know? And it was a lot of fun. So to me, that's what's important, is if I can still fly when the weather's not nice.
Right.
And that's where I really appreciate it with the tricopter. Hey, I don't have a big yard, but hey, I can step outside and burn a battery or two through it and have a blast, you know?
Yeah, and I still fly mine. I have the original Vapor. Mm-hmm. I haven't even upgraded to the Night Vapor yet. So I still fly my original Vapor in the house in the winter, along with the mini Vapor that I have. Mm-hmm. But I've caught myself several times. I get home late from work. The sun's just coming down. The air is dead calm, and I'll pull the Vapor out and catch thermals of the heat coming off my roof. Like, just circle around my roof and then up and up and up, and then I come down and go back over the roof and up and up. And that thing's just so much fun.
Nice.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No, same thing with the Vapors. Just the level of control you have, or like you feel like you're in control much more than I thought you would.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was just going to be more or less free float and like the silver lit airplanes.
Right.
It's fantastic.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't think there's anything that really can fly any slower than a Vapor.
Yeah.
I mean, really.
I feel like
it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Got another one? Or?
Not really.
Not really?
Those are the main ones.
Okay. I just got a couple more. The other one, too, that I bought for my son was a Champ. I actually own a Champ. Or actually, I bought it for my son. Again, that's something that I didn't think. And this is even before we had it at flight test and we did anything with them or whatever. I seen it online, like, for $80 and it's a trainer, I'm going to buy it. But I fly that thing all the time in the summer, late evening around my yard, all the time. And I've done a lot of training. We've done a lot of training out at the flying field. I'd say probably 5 or 6 guys that have just showed up with that airplane. And we see them out there and it's like, take off, crash, you know, and they, this thing's a piece of junk and it doesn't fly right, you know, and you get it off of them and you balance it out, you fly it, you trim it so it's hands off, and then you hand them the controller again, and guess what?
Yeah.
They're flying around.
It's a totally different airplane.
Right. And I think it's one of the best small little trainers out there. So that was another one that I just love. I fly it all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, good tip in there is the balancing it.
Yes.
CG, proper CG
yep.
is the most important thing ever.
Yes. And trimming, that was one of the big things when the first couple flights I did with my stepdad is that plane was so far out of trim because he has a DX5 and he has a couple small helicopters, so he has to rebind the radio.
Oh.
And then he trims for, say, like the helicopter. Mm-hmm. Well, then he goes back to the, you know, to bind it back to the airplane. Well, then it's so far out of trim, and then he thinks there's something wrong with it because it's just completely going left or going up or going down. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So when I got it and flew it and trimmed it, it was like a whole different airplane.
Yeah.
You know, I was flying at half throttle. I just, you know, held up the transmitter and passed it over to him. It was just straight and left, you know, and he's like, how is that doing? I said, well, it wasn't trimmed out. So that's another big thing that people don't do.
Yeah.
Yeah, I tell you, it was funny because I remember back, I bought the Spectra, and I was using that as a glider, and I was flying it, and I had trouble flying it, and this was before flight test. And I know I was having trouble, and I had a crash, and it wiped the wing out. And it was funny, during one of the episodes we were shooting, we got talking about CG, and I think Bixler was talking about some of the characteristics of tail heavy.
Yeah.
And soon as he did, man, I can remember that crash, and it's like, that was it.
Yep.
It was the CG. It was tail heavy.
Right.
But it makes a difference, man, huge difference,
yeah.
if you're going to be able to fly it or not.
Right. And I don't think – seems like every plane you get, no matter what the recommended CG is, it's always a little off, a little bit here,
yeah.
you know, one way or the other.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever really had one that was spot on. That's probably just from a production standpoint, I would imagine.
They
I don't
go
know.
Safer usually.
That's true, mm-hmm. yeah. And you probably do the same thing. I've learned now from flying sailplanes and DLGs that – my CG now on almost everything just keeps going a little farther back and a little farther back, you know, on
it's,
everything.
It's fun. It makes it interesting.
Right, right. Because even with the Radian now, I've modded my original Radian to where I think my CG is an inch and a half back from the stock position, you know, which is a lot.
Mm-hmm. Now you're riding the lift much better.
Right, right. I mean, it's a little touchier, you know, but, you know, if I'm into some wind, then I just move the battery back up a little bit. But, so... All right, just a couple more. I'll get off this subject. But just a couple other ones that actually when the Beaver first come out and I seen it, I didn't think much of it.
Really?
I liked the looks of it, and I thought it was cool, but I didn't think that would be for me until we seen them fly and we had them, you know, did the review at flight test. And then when we seen that a year ago down at the Horizon Indoor and we watched that thing fly indoors, I was like, that's it. I was sold.
Yeah.
And again, that one is probably one of my favorite airplanes.
Yep. Who makes that?
FlyZone, the FlyZone Beaver. If there's no question to ask, that is one of the best flying airplanes out there.
It really is.
As far as looks and flying, you know, and comes with...
Yeah, what you get in the package.
Right, you know, you got the floats come with it. We put a little bit bigger wheels on ours, you know, to take the rougher fields, but, the thing's just unbelievable.
It looks really cool with the bigger wheels,
right.
too.
Yeah.
There's bush tires on there.
Yeah.
It looks really great.
Doesn't
it
have LEDs?
It's got full navigation lights. Like, not only does it have, you know, the red and the green, but it also has the strobes. It's got the strobes on the wingtips, got the rotating beacons on it.
Nice.
It's got the strobe on the tail. So
yeah, it's fully loaded.
Yeah.
Amazing plane.
Right.
Oh, dude, we got out one day. It was a Sunday afternoon, and it was snowing to beat the band. It was snowing so crazy. And Chris says, you want to go fly? And it's one of those moments where it's like, yes, we got to go fly or I'm going to jump off the roof. So we went out, and I left my floats on mine, and he had skis on his. And, oh, man, that was one of the best flying days I can ever. We had so much fun. And then bringing that thing and landing on the snow and taking off again. That was fun.
Yeah.
Snow was flying sideways.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous.
It was snowing so hard that the plane would get about 20 feet away and it would start to disappear.
Oh, wow.
That's how bad it was. And at first I was like, oh, this is not going to be good. This is not going to be fun. But it turned out to be phenomenal. And it was like gusting 15, 18 miles an hour that day.
Wow.
And I just didn't think that, you know, we'd be able to fly, but I couldn't believe it. Those things handled it.
Yeah.
Did the snow accumulate?
No. And again, I was thinking about this on vacation, and I was I flew down with a full-scale airline pilot on the way to Florida, and we had some big discussions about this. His thing is two things. One was it was probably the material. He says he doesn't think that the snow is going to stick to foam.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Because I was telling them about the, you know, some of the quadcopters. There's some videos online where the guys have been icing up. You know, the props have been icing up.
Yeah.
You know, they get in the right conditions and, you know, 32 degrees and, you know. So we didn't have no ice on our props, though, either, did we?
No.
Which was kind of unusual. But anyway, one was the foam. He really doesn't think, you know, that it's just a material. Two, it's probably a scale thing. It's a scale snowflake to the scale plane.
Yeah.
You know, it's just not there. The snowflakes are probably too big. And two, it could be the small wing design. You know, if you had a larger airfoil, you know, that might contribute to it too. I don't know. That was just some of his theories.
Now, we did have trouble the one time we went back, though, and it was like 32 degrees, 33. So it was just getting warm enough, and it would stick to the floats and to the skis.
Right.
That was a problem.
Right.
Yeah, taking off.
Right.
It almost didn't take off a couple of times. We actually had to get it to go through the grass and then get it up in the air. But boy, when you'd come down to land, you'd almost have to alpha it when you set it down because it would stop.
Yeah,
it
would just,
right,
you would just hit and stick. And the big carbon cub, the E-Flight carbon cub, it would just, the tail would come up and then it wouldn't even move. It would just go straight up into the air and then go.
Yeah.
And Wayne had a couple landings with the Beaver in that snowstorm where he came down. And, I mean, literally, if you cut the throttle, a quarter throttle, it would go backwards.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
And then he would come down about half throttle and just – and there was no – like, there was nothing. Yeah. It was zero.
Yeah.
So it was pretty cool.
Nice.
Just a couple other ones real quick. The Apprentice.
Mm-hmm.
When I first seen The Apprentice, my friend, you know, Pat, who's been on the show, he got an Apprentice, and I really didn't think I would like that plane either. But flying it again, it's a very relaxing, easy to fly. It's got the tricycle gear on it, you know. It's, it takes off and lands on its own practically.
So why is the tricycle gear nicer?
I like the tricycle gear because on the rougher terrain, you don't have the nose overs.
Yep.
You know?
And why, like, yeah, why? Because it looks more unstable because it's a smaller footprint.
Well, the reason, you know, you got that, the main front gear is clear out onto the nose, where on a tail dragger, that normal gear is just in front of the CG. So, and then, you know, when the wheels grab, you got all that weight from the back of the plane wanting to pull forward and tipping it, you know, over on the prop. With the tricycle gear, that gear so far out front, you know, when, you know, that pressure comes on the nose, it's going right down on that main gear on the front.
Yeah, and so, you have even more control.
Exactly. They steer better, they land better, they, you know, take off better.
Because I remember when I was just getting into the hobby, I thought the tricycle gear would be less... have less control on ground because it just looks smaller.
It does, right.
I didn't understand why. I mean, you have the tail wheel all the way on the back. It's huge.
Yes.
I was confused.
Right. Until you fly one, you're like, wow, that works really well.
Yeah.
You know, and again, I found that out with the when I originally bought the T-28 Trojan because we were flying, you know, the Super Cubs back when we were learning to fly. I mean, that was always a problem, even though we put the bigger wheels on and everything and it's nosing over and everything.
Yeah.
And then I buy the T-28 stock right out of the box and the thing just right through the grass, takes off and lands, no nose over, nothing. I was like, that's the way to go.
Yeah, it just looks a little bit funky.
It does look a little funky, you know. But yeah. That's all I got for that. So anybody else, any more you can think of? Is that it?
No, I think that's it.
Is that, how about any helicopters or any tricopters? Mm-hmm. There's got to be...
Something that...
There's got to be one.
Yeah, the ready-to-fly quads flip.
Okay, yeah. Yep.
I did not think that would fly that well.
Uh-huh.
It flew amazing. Just looking at it, it looks kind of like it doesn't look as polished as other ready-to-fly stuff. But
right.
Man, that it flew amazing.
Yeah, I agree with you there. Again, when I built that quad with the ready-to-fly Wii board, I was like, it'll probably fly, but it ain't going to be that good. And, you know, it was really good. So
yeah. It's just crazy. And I don't know, helicopters, they all feel the same to me. I haven't flown big helicopters in a long time. Since I got multirotors, I don't have the need for them anymore.
Right. They still scare me anyway, them big helicopters, man.
Yeah, we had a Raptor 550 almost kill me a couple of months ago.
Really?
Yeah. I was flying it and it had some vibration.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing too bad, but the tail servo gave up because of the vibrations. And so it would do full pyros. It would go all the way max to one side, and it started doing pyros. I'm not that accomplished of a pilot to do pyroflips and land.
Oh my gosh.
And it was coming towards me, so all I do was just watch for the tail and try to get the disc away from me and punch it so I can get it away from me and the people around me as well. Because we have people, I think we have a video. We never posted it, but. And I got it, so I just watched it and punched it and got away from me, and the servo kicked in again. So I could bring it in, I just landed it as quickly as possible, and I haven't touched it since. Wow. Well, actually, I did touch it once, but I thought it was the gyro wigging out, but it's the servo that's bad.
Wow. I never really thought too much of it till that when you set up the dummy. Remember the one episode you set up the dummy, had the watermelon on the – and what size was that? Was that a 600 or 700
No,
size?
That's a 550.
550?
Yeah.
Man, and you went out there and sliced that thing up like nothing.
Yeah, that's on the Gremlin channel. It's called the Killicopter.
Yeah.
And the idea was to hit the watermelon with, and just see how much damage, because that helicopter was destined to die anyway, so I wanted to see how much damage it could do. It was so windy that day, and it was set up 3D like crazy, so the pitch on it was so, it went like 17 degrees. It was insane. So it was really hard to get it to hover properly. So I flew it straight into, I made a little dummy, and I flew straight into their stomach instead of the watermelon.
Right.
But the whole thing, it just exploded.
I know.
It's crazy. So scary.
Right. And then after hearing about that poor guy in New York who decapitated himself.
Yeah, that was actually a team pilot for
Alliance. It was?
Yeah.
So
he was an accomplished pilot.
So obviously it had some kind of mechanical failure of some sort, I would imagine.
Yeah, I would imagine that too, because, that was really sad.
Wow. So them things just, I mean, nothing against helipods. I have nothing against them, but man, them things just scare me. They really do. Even like a 450, you know, them guys are buzzing around.
It scares me a little bit because I flew my 550 back in the day. And I would stand like 4 feet behind it when it spooled up, and I would fly it, do like really close, like air stops just to feel the air.
Yeah. Oh.
And that's, I mean.
No more than that.
Yeah, old me is a stupid person.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah, see, that's what, but I'm the exact opposite where I want to fly helicopters more. I want to get back into it, but I want to get out of the 450 range and I want to go to a larger one, but I want to go more of the scale
stuff. Yeah, you like the scale.
I like more of the scale. It's not the 3D, that kind of stuff.
Right.
I love helicopters. So, you know, building a Sikorsky or Bell or something would be great.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
You should do that.
Do it.
Yeah, get on that. All right, I have a crazy idea. Are you ready for this? And I think it's possible, and I think you, David, would be the man to try this. But I got a bunch of air rifles and like to do some target shooting stuff around my house. And I get a little overboard, you know. I got some pretty high-powered air rifles, and I got some pretty high-powered sniper scopes on them. And we set up targets, and, you know, me and my buddies, and it's just fun. So anyway, I was thinking, I think it would be awesome if we could get a quadcopter and mount either some kind of scope or some type of binoculars on there. And I think the binoculars might work better because some of them have the quick focus on them, and you might be able to get a servo arm on there. Mm-hmm. Okay, so here's my idiotic thinking here. So we do an episode. We build this high-tech surveillance quadcopter, okay? Mm-hmm. So then we have, and they don't know, you know, where we're at or whatever, but say we get Alex or Josh or somebody who goes out and we set up a little table like in by the garage there, and maybe we give them some paint guns or something, okay? And then say we put, I don't know, something in front of them that we would have to read. All right. So then what we would do is we'd have to try to get that quadcopter close enough with the binoculars or the scope on it to read the passcode without being detected. And if they get, you know, and if they see us or we get detected, then they can just fire away with the paintball guns.
That can be expensive.
Is that crazy?
Yes.
All right.
No, I think it's, I like the thinking, but I mean, Quad, you would hear that anywhere.
Yeah, I was thinking that.
Have headphones on, maybe, like listening to music.
Either that or it would have to be one big scope. Yeah. I would take that.
Yeah, a brushless gimbal with a scope on it, a second person controlling the gimbal, and just have one person controlling the hex or whatever, and then have zoom in capabilities. Because you need something that's really stable.
Yeah. Because, I got some scopes. You could go out to the end of that field there and sit in here, and I could see what color your eyes are.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah, I can hear the drone people now.
Yeah.
No.
I just thought it would be something interesting.
Yeah. No. Go ahead.
It'd just be an awesome episode, you know?
That would be so hard. No, I think it's doable.
Yeah.
It would be interesting to try it on a brushless gimbal.
All right, I say we do it. I say we go for it.
Yeah, I only have a little bit more than a month here.
Yeah. What are we going to do?
Fly over and visit David.
You can't no, leave. No. You just can't leave.
Yeah, you can come visit.
My wife would be there right now, tomorrow, on the plane, and we will be over there. Yeah. Nice. I guarantee it.
I have a huge field out back.
Oh, do you really?
Yeah, and there's a train track. Train tracks going over the fields. It's maybe 2 miles away.
Uh-huh.
And they have high-speed trains going there so we could fly and spot. It would be kind of fun.
Really?
Oh,
yes.
That would be awesome.
So what's your favorite flying at home that you like to do?
Discus-nage.
That's what I figured.
Yeah. I go out and do that when it's raining. Like, I just go out and throw it hard and do... throw it as hard as I can, just go up, and then you do 2 or 3 loops and, like, blender it if you have really high throws, and then just come in, hand catch it, throw it again, and just go, practice catching and launching when the weather is not great. But
hey, we heard you on one of the podcasts talk about that new, what is it?
The LaBelle?
Yes. So me and Wayne were on the forums. We've been reading and watching that. That thing for the money was $120?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How good do you think that thing's going to be?
It's one of those, it could be awesome or it could be terrible. I think it's going to be somewhere in between.
Yeah.
Maybe. I think it might be, $125 is pretty awesome.
Right. Yeah. And I was looking at like the wing loading and everything for, because it's 40 inch, I want to say, or?
I can't remember. Yeah.
I think it's in the 40s, and the wing loading was still, like, way low, like 9 or 10.
Yeah, I think they're going to have – the problem is it's not going to be stiff because a real discus launch glider has the whole surface is the strength. The shell is either glass or carbon.
That's true.
And the stiffer the wing, the higher you can launch it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's not going to be as high. You probably can launch it higher than you can your Elf.
I would think so, yeah.
But not much,
right?
I would think. How big is the Elf? 1 meter?
About a meter.
Yeah, so this is a little bit larger than that, I think 1.2.
Right.
So I don't think you will get that much higher, but the wing loading is going to be lower.
Right.
Probably. So it might be good.
I think it's going to be awesome for the price.
I think it'll be fun. It's not, you know, and that's the thing that gets me on the forums is, you know, too many people try to compare it to a real deal.
Yeah.
You know, competition is like, no, that's not what it is. That's not what it's designed for. That would be like the UMX Radian, you know. Are you going to be flying that thing, you know, a mile and a half up in the air? No.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
But
it might be a good gateway drug.
that could really get a lot of people into it and hooked on it too. You know, give it a shot for $120.
Yeah, I want to try one. Hopefully we can get one before I go. We can try it out.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely.
Yeah, because I guess they started releasing them for the pre-orders. I guess they're already getting them. So.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Cool. We did the Alula, and the I think they discontinued that.
They did. Yeah, they got a couple new things, I guess, coming out, and they discontinued that. Yeah,
yeah. That's a good, like, practice for people.
Right,
it doesn't launch as nice as
a lot of guys love that thing for slope soaring.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they throw a big, giant weight on the front of that thing and just go to town.
Yeah, it's a great plane. It is. But it would be, the discus launch version is going to be much nicer.
Sweet. Well, anything else? Anybody got anything else they want to talk about?
I had something and I forgot.
Well, we'll give you a second. You think about it. I'm going to rattle on here a little bit. Thanks, guys. We really appreciate you listening. And if you have any questions, suggestions, or comments or anything, don't forget to hit me up on Twitter. I'm at FT After Hours. I'll take your email, too, at chris@flighttest.com. We love to hear from you guys. I know this episode's a little short. We've been really busy, and I was out of town, but we wanted to get this out to you and make sure we gave you a podcast for Monday. So we just glad you're I guess I'm glad that absolutely. I'm still here doing this.
Yeah.
So anything else?
We're going to release a new multirotor product.
Oh, did not know about that either. Man, I've been really out of the loop.
Actually, you have tried the prototype of it. That's the Electro Hub.
It's called Electro Hub. Okay, yep.
So I don't know when that's being released, but I just built we got the final version of those plates, and I just built a spider quad and a 3D printed brushless gimbal of my own design, and that I'm going to throw on there and see if I can get some good results. Have that as a chase copter with a stabilized gimbal would be nice.
Hey, speaking of 3D printers, like I know you guys have probably a really one of the first versions of 3D printers out?
We had the first, it was an old RepRap. It was absolutely awful.
Right.
Absolutely awful. It wouldn't, yeah. So we sold that. Now we have an...
Oh, did you get another one?
Yeah, the other one we have, it looks old,
uh-huh.
but it's not.
Oh.
It's an Affinia H series.
Okay.
And it has a build... volume of 5 by 5 by 5 inches, so mm-hmm. it's pretty small, but it's fantastic.
Oh, really? Now, can you change the different materials?
Not on that one.
No.
It more or less only prints plastic.
Oh, okay.
But there's, I mean, you could change materials mm-hmm. in it, but it's optimized for that.
Oh, okay. All right.
Certain Sweet. Ones you can change.
Yeah, I was going to say, I've fallen on Twitter and stuff, these different ones, are, you know, depending on what you're doing, the different materials, you swap out the spools and go to town.
Yeah, and I've been 3D printing like crazy because I absolutely love it.
Uh-huh.
And I made an iCup for my 6D. Ooh, I can print one for you if you want to.
Oh, look at Wayne's eyes light up. iCup?
It's an eyepiece for if you shoot video, for instance, or in really bright light and mm-hmm. you use the LCD, it's really hard to see it.
Yes.
So I made a little eye cup that slides on top of the normal viewfinder holder. Because mm-hmm. normally you have to add a metal frame and you have
yes.
to use magnets and stuff. This you can just slide over that that holder and it fits over the screen, and it uses a $1 lens from Pat Kattan's. And it's, to me and everyone that I let try it, it's brighter, bigger, and more light-proof than the $125 ones that we use. And it
nice.
Costs roughly $4 to build.
Yes, I got to see this.
It's pretty awesome. I don't have it with me today, but yeah, I can bring it in.
All right. I'd like to see that.
So yeah, 3D printers. Hopefully we can share some plans for you guys, like the gimbal, when we
Ooh,
get that
yeah.
ironed out.
Mm-hmm. I even seen that they're 3D printing food now. Have you seen that?
Yeah.
That's unbelievable.
It's crazy.
I know. All right, anything else?
No.
That's it.
Yeah.
Oh, I forget what I was going to say. Never mind. All right, guys.
I want to ask you one question.
Are you guys
going to be at the Toledo show?
Absolutely.
So you're both going?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
So if any listeners out there, see if you can find Chris and Wayne. Are you going to wear something special?
Yeah, I'm going to wear a disguise so they can't find me.
A red dress?
Yeah, red dress.
Look for the guy in the red dress.
No, we'll definitely be up there hanging out. Is Flight Test going to do anything up there this year?
We're just going to go.
Oh, just going to go?
Yeah.
Like same as last year, probably?
Yeah.
Okay.
And try to actually see the whole
yes.
place.
Yes. This time, I want to go in first, walk around, and
yes.
then we can go talk to everybody.
Yeah, probably a fake mustache or something would be nice.
Yeah, well, I I don't know. They may not recognize you if you dress up, but as soon as you talk, they know who you are.
Yeah.
So.
Hello.
All right, guys. That's it. We're done. We're out of here. Yep. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back here in a couple weeks. All right?
Thank you very much.
See ya.
See ya.